Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. I'm Phil Carroll, and today we're joined by Sapan Ghai, Chief Commercial Officer of Sovereign Metals. Welcome back, Sapan. How's life treating you?
Yeah, not too bad, Phil. Not too bad. I mean, life is good, but the markets are horrendous.
You can say that again. It's terrible, isn't it? And they're going to get better because our hero, the savior, Elon Musk, has just, you know, he's finalized the Twitter deal. So they're going to have a much bigger platform, and he's going to get rid of all the spam bots. And you know, these shares should be flourishing because everybody's got a kind of an outlet to get the message out.
Yeah, if only it was easy to have a couple of $100 billion and a kitchen sink, you could do anything, right?
I mean, that was quality, wasn't it? Carrying the sink into the Twitter headquarters.
And but did anybody tell him that? Did anybody tell him that was not a kitchen sink? That was a bathroom sink.
Well, did you expect the old Belfast sink or something?
Yes, he needed a Belfast sink, or he needed a metal one at least to say this is the kitchen sink with a drainer on it. But instead, he had a bathroom one.
I don't think
the whole point was let that sink in. It didn't matter what it sink. It could have been any kind of sink.
Yeah. Good. I don't think Elon Musk spends much time in the kitchen these days.
No, I'm sure he doesn't. So obviously,
I think he's probably never.
So just this week, we saw the company report further significant results for the 61 air core holes from the Kasir rutile project, which is, again, the world's largest rutile deposit. And with those results confirming that rutile and graphite mineralization is continuous from surface down to the top of Saprock, generally at 20 to 25 meters vertical depth. So these results obviously highlight the potential for the mining pits to be extended at depth. Do you want to just talk us through how significant this news is?
Yeah, sure. So look, we announced the results for 61 air core holes that we had made at Kasir. The highlights included basically grades like 1.5% rutile, 5 meters. We had 6 meters at 1.4% rutile. Given that rutile grades out there, as you know, rutile is usually a byproduct of ilmenite mines, and those kind of grades are anywhere down to 0.05%. I mean, these are big grades, right, that we're talking about. And the fact that we always knew this was like a blanket style mineralization just sitting on the surface of the earth, just a big blanket of mineralized material that contains this rutile. Now to say, actually, if you go further down, that blanket is thicker. It's less of a blanket and more of a duvet all of a sudden. Right? So
now you're just showing off, Sapan. It's like we have the world's biggest rutile and got some graphite to throw in for the sake of it. And now we've got even more. Okay,
so yes, it's like... Look, I think it gives us great bragging rights out there. But look, let's take it into what does it mean commercially, right? And what it means is it's all about the expansion potential for pits. So if you're mining this stuff and you're before, you know, we had a scoping study out that talked about mining this stuff down to 5, 10, 14 meters in some areas. And if you're saying that mineralization carries on further down, it means we can stay in the same area and just mine a little bit deeper and get the same quality of material out.
Yeah, I mean, we're not talking about great depths here. Even to 25 meters is not exactly, to the center of the earth, if you like. It's a digger and digging it up, I presume.
Well, it's not even digging it up. If you remember, we're looking at using hydro mining. So it's literally an automated water hose jet just smashing away at this material, creating a slurry that gets pumped into one of the plants where the rutile comes out one end and the graphite on the other. You know, there's no pyrometallurgy, so there's no real furnaces or heat involved in any of this. There's no real, you know, use of acids or anything like that. It's all very conventional. It's using the physical properties of the materials that we want, i.e. rutile and graphite, and being able to separate that out from all the rest of the material.
And you're also progressing, I think, with the solar power to run things, is that right?
Yeah, so look, we a lot of companies these days, you know, love to talk about ESG. And so one way or another, every company's, or at least in the mining space, you seem to see every company's commodity end up in a Tesla one way or another, right? But what we've been doing and what we've been looking at from almost day dot is, well, it's all well and good having a product that ends up in you know, the clean tech markets, but how do you get to that product? How do you extract that product in the first place in a very environmentally safe, environmentally friendly and sustainable manner? And, you know, I already mentioned hydro mining, but yeah, on the solar side, we're looking at 100% renewable energy operation here. So you've got the Malawi grid already, and that's run by hydro, but it is Malawi. That grid's not going to run 24 hours a day. And therefore, we've looked at solar as our primary source of power. And I think in our scoping study, we looked at something like a 28 megawatt plant, which isn't huge. And that was based on indications from a company called JCM Power. They're a Canadian company and would be our independent power provider. They would essentially build the plants and we would pay them the costs of taking the electricity generated from the power from those solar power plants. And they've built a number of these across Africa. In fact, they've built two solar plants in Malawi itself already, one 60 megawatt plant and one 20 megawatt plant. So another 28 megawatt plant for us to be fully ramped up is not a big ask for these guys.
Yeah, and they can push that back into the grid, obviously, if it's not being used by you, I take it.
Yeah, totally. And look, it's Malawi. And one thing Malawi is blessed with is one of many things it's blessed with is ample sunshine.
Yeah. Well, you were there recently. So tell us a little bit about that. How did it go?
Yeah, I was there. Look, I was there a few weeks ago. In fact, I'm back there next week as well. And part of that is essentially we've grown as a company very, very quickly from, you know, almost a couple of us looking at graphite potential in Malawi into all of a sudden the world's largest rutile deposit. And therefore, you know, or notwithstanding, you know, the change in our market cap and our share price, we've tried to play catch up with where the company's at. We're less of that kind of two-man band exploration company. And we're trying to look a bit more, in quotation marks, blue chippy as a corporate. So, you know, getting things like our health and safety correct, our management culture correct, ensuring that we are, you know, we are perceived as, and we are, you know, a very well-governed corporate entity is all part and parcel of what I've been looking at. But yeah, you're right. I was there. I managed to get out to one of the last drill rigs that was on the project at the time. There's actually a video, a very, very short clip of me out there. People can actually see the lay of the land from that clip on our Twitter feed. But yeah, look, Malawi, it's such an easy country to operate in. It doesn't have a lot of the issues that you'd find in other, you know, developing and frontier markets or economies. And luckily, well, I don't know, luckily or serendipitously, while I was there, we had a bit of a shout out from the president on one of the grandest stages. So the president of Malawi, while he was giving his address at the UN General Assembly in New York, was talking about how Malawi is attracting private investment into it. How that's working in the agricultural space, but also we'll start working in the mining space. And he specifically mentioned, you know, now that Malawi is host to the largest rutile deposit ever found. So as the kids say, a nice big shout out for us there.
Yeah. He didn't say sovereign metals though, or did he?
Well, no, I mean, it's still the UN General Assembly. It's not a.
I think didn't he mention he mentioned he mentioned Kassia though, didn't he?
He did. He mentioned Kassia for sure.
I don't know if he actually mentioned Kassia by name, but I mean everyone knows what he's talking about. I mean, there's no one else.
It's a given. Yes, it's a given. Yeah.
I mean, it's not the first time you've had an endorsement like that as well, is it? I mean, whether you make a comparison, but I know that is it Rick Rule from Sprott, obviously, that it was picked by Sprott with Sovereign Metals. I think it was an equity research note put out in sort of September 2000 or September of last year. And obviously, they think they put a buy rating on around $1.20 a share. But yeah, it's quite encouraging to see them make that kind of pick, isn't it, as well?
Look, Sprott have been a holder of ours, and they've helped us along the way from the early days of when we first found, you know, rutile in the tailings of the graphite. They've always been very keen on our story, and they've, you know, helped us along in terms of coming to financings. I think they still hold something like 10, 11% of the company, obviously within other sub funds within the Sprott entity. But yes, you know, Sprott's always been there as a as an encouraging investor.
Good. So the only elephant in the room is that you're effectively valued at about 40% of your current yearly high, and yet you're in the best position you've ever been right now. So yeah, I'm not going to ask you to explain it, but it's like, what's that all about?
Yeah, well, that's like explaining why is the market for all junior mining companies the way it is right now. You know, I mean, look, we're all investors as well as alongside the day job, so to speak. And I think what we're finding is a lot of people just want cash in their pocket right now, because, you know, at least they understand the notes in their pocket than, you know, what the share price is, and albeit speculative stocks could do from not even a day-to-day, but an hour-to-hour basis, just given the geopolitical climate, given the macroeconomics, and all the rest of it. However, having said that, I've just come off the back of a two-week roadshow marketing out to institutional investors throughout Europe. And one of the interesting things that I saw was there's a bunch of investors who are following exactly what you'd think the market to be doing right now. Be cautious. Let's not take any risky hedges out here. Let's just wait and watch and see what happens with, you know, macro inflation, see what potentially Russia does, waited on China and its GDP announcements earlier in the week. But there is a handful, and it's usually those type of investors who are more multifamily offices or, you know, high net worth private investors who actually have already got to a point where they've said, okay, I'm taking the contrarian view here now. And doing the whole, you know, Warren Buffett thing, when everyone else sells, you buy. And they're taking that approach. And look, albeit a lot of the investments those guys are making are in more of the private space rather than the public markets, but they are still playing in the public markets.
Good. I mean, it looks and it is vastly undervalued. There seems to be a huge risk premium put on something that isn't as risky as the premium that's been put on it. But let's see if the market starts to realize that it is undervalued.
Yeah, look, I still make the point that when a project is the size of Cassia, and these things only come along, you know, once in a generation, and specifically in a commodity where all the supply demand dynamics are such that this commodity is undersupplied, it is over demanded into the future. You know, you've got to stop looking at this as your usual kind of mining project that has, you know, anything from 10, 15, 20 year mine life, and start thinking, actually, this thing could go on for ages, for absolute decades. And in that context, what's more important than, you know, what's the value of that project today is how much cash is this thing going to be spitting out over those decades? And you know, we've put numbers in our expanded scoping study showing that our EBITDA per annum would be something like $320 million per annum. And that's only over the 25 years that we've modeled this thing. And remember, those 25 years only mined 30% of the known resource. This was before we knew it goes deeper, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So really, I would encourage people to stop thinking about this as a finite mining project that you look over a 10-year period and start thinking this could almost be like a utility.
Mm. I mean, it is the size of Manchester. We've discussed this in the past, haven't we? Greater Manchester, isn't it, from memory?
Look, the footprint's huge. Yeah. That means two things. Sometimes people think, oh, with a huge footprint come huge issues. But look, there's a number of benefits of having that. Firstly, we don't need to mine everywhere to be massively economic, right? So let's say there is a cultural heritage site somewhere or there is a village somewhere, or there are people who don't want us to be mining near them, you just create a buffer zone and go elsewhere.
Yeah.
Right. You just go around those guys to other areas of the project and mine there. And now, knowing that, you know, this material actually goes deeper than we thought, it may be a point that we just stay in certain areas where we continue to mine for twice as long in one area rather than having to move on to the next stage.
Sure. And the other thing is, I mean, do you think the market's waiting for the PFS, for the pre-feasibility study before it starts? Because usually you've got like the Lassonde curve, you've got the different phases and everything. Do you think that will have a significant impact on the company?
Look, a PFS always has a significant impact on any mining company. And we're hoping for that PFS to come out mid-year next year. But that's not to say that there won't be enough, or hopefully enough, reasons to invest in Sovereign between now and then. You know, we're still working and talking to potential off-takers. We have two MOUs in place. We're hoping for a handful more of those in place. We are going to continue looking at test work programs for our rutile and our graphite. I think the market will start to understand the enormity of this project and the discovery of it. And, you know, we'll slowly de-risk this project as we get to the PFS stage. And at the PFS stage, we will, you know, fingers crossed, have some decent economics to put out there and tell people, if we were to mine Cassia, this is what it would look like on an economic basis. Hopefully that's in line with all of our expectations.
But the $350 million US dollars a year, This is assuming probably not even the current graphite price. This is a lower graphite price and also a lower rutile price than is currently in the market. Is that right or not?
Yeah, that's totally right. Look, those numbers, so that $320 million US dollars of EBITDA are based on a rutile price of about $1,100 a ton or $1,200 a ton. Current rutile prices are around $1,500 a ton. Spot market prices are around $2,200 a ton. So we've taken quite a significant kind of haircut there. On the graphite side, it's a lot more interesting in terms of the pricing, because we've taken a basket price of around $1,100 a ton of graphite, flake graphite concentrate, based on the type of flake size distribution in our concentrate. What we haven't done is then said, well, you know, part of that flake size distribution will end up in the lithium ion battery space, and that space will obviously have the price in that arena is bound to go up. We haven't looked at those metrics. We have been given those metrics by other independent forecasters. You know, some forecasters have put out quite high, and I'm not going to go into the details of what those numbers are, but if you can, a quick Google can tell you what potential flake graphite concentrate prices could be out there. But we've again gone for something quite conservative, and that's with a view that, look, we know that we're in a inflationary period time frame here. We know that inflation will obviously hit our cost level, but we don't want to overcook any of the economics. We want economics that we can stand by no matter what may happen in the macro environment.
Yeah, okay, all very positive. And yeah, we look forward to the progression of this project. I mean, I think this project is pretty essential for Malawi for a start, and also pretty essential for the world market in rutile and in graphite. I mean, there's going to be, I think, a very serious lack of both of these in the coming years. And you're going to be coming on stream just as that lack is coming to its peak, I think.
Yeah, look, in the rutile, I'll give you some numbers now. 2017, the world was producing about 700,000 tons of rutile, and that was being gobbled up quite easily back then. Today, we're producing about 500,000 tons. By the time we come online, the existing operations will be producing 300,000 tons. So given that we are looking at only producing around 250,000 tons of rutile ourselves, all we'll be doing is bringing those back to today's supply levels. So we're not, you know, we're not glutting the market. We're not expecting to really affect the price from where it is today in any major sort of major way. We're simply replacing those lost tons between now and when we come online.
And where are those lost tons coming from? Who's losing? Are any of the big majors basically running down rutile?
No, look, there's two main sources of rutile mined in the world. One will be Sierra Rutile, which we're all aware of. It used to be an AIM-listed company bought by the Australian guys at Iluka, and then it was demerged recently, so it's its own entity now. I think it's just sat on the ASX for now. It's an old mine. It's an old operation, and it's been in production since the 60s, I think. And what that means is all the easy stuff has been mined, and you know it's getting harder. As with any deposit, they always get harder and harder to mine over time. And then the other kind of major source of rutile production is from Base Resources Kwale project or Kwale mine. And look, that I think has another 2-3 years to run per their announcements. So what you're finding is there just isn't enough of this rutile being produced today to cater for the market.
So what's the chances of a major coming in and writing you a big check then?
I think there's always a chance. I'm not going to put a probability number on it whatsoever. But look, we'll always do what's best for our shareholders, obviously. I mean, that's what we're here to do.
Sapan Ghai, CCO of Sovereign Metals, thanks very much for your time.
Brilliant. Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Sapa.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.